Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. And today we are going to move into the pivotal 15th century, an era when the future of Spain would be shaped radically for a number of reasons, not the least being the European discovery of America in 1492, thanks to a daring mission funded by the Queen of Castile. But let's not rush to the end of the century yet. We probably won't even get there in this episode. A lot has to happen before that. And by a lot, I mean much of the same that has been dominating the scene for decades, that period of chaos and instability. So let's get ourselves situated. Spain's situation hasn't changed a lot. Castile has absorbed León and Galicia and obviously Asturias and controls much of the peninsula all the way down to the south in what is present-day Andalusia or Andalusia, with the exception of Granada, which the Moors have managed to hold on to for dear life. To the west, the Kingdom of Portugal has pretty much consolidated, but marriages between the royalty of Castile and Portugal are frequent, and this is both beneficial and problematic at times. Castile still has its sights set on taking the territory because it would vastly improve its maritime situation. Then you have Navarra up north, which hasn't changed much for a very long time, but it is still very influential in its own way. And finally, you have the Crown of Aragon, that conglomerate of territories made up of the kingdoms of Aragon and Valencia and Catalonia. These regions had suffered greatly from the Black Death throughout the 14th century and struggled to recover their commercial influence in the Mediterranean. So that's basically where their interests are, and that's where we are in Spain. Now let's start with Castile. And to do so, we will quickly backtrack and recall what has happened up to the 15th century. Our friend Pedro I of Castile, known as Pedro the Cruel, was killed in 1369 by his half-brother Enrique II with the immeasurable help of Enrique's aide, the French commander Bertrand of Guesclin. Enrique was made king and thus became the first of a new dynasty, the House of Trastamara. And for the next 100 years or so, we will see a string of rulers in Castile during a time of great instability. The monarchs are far from absolute rulers. They are constantly engaged in a power struggle with the high nobility, the barons of Castile. They have their supporters at times, and they also have their detractors, and they'll have their competition. Some of these monarchs are effective, but many are considered to be weak. And to make matters more confusing, they all seem to have the same name. In fact, there are two names that we should remember, Enrique and Juan. First, you have Enrique II from 1369 to 1379, then Juan I from 1379 to 1390, then Enrique III from 1390 to 1406, then Juan II from 1406 to 1454, and finally Enrique IV from 1454 to 1474. And after he dies, Isabel I, known as Isabel the Catholic or Isabella of Columbus fame, who will reign from 1474 to 1504. Starting at the beginning, Enrique rules for 10 years before being succeeded by his son Juan I, who was on the throne until 1390. Juan led a campaign to try and force the Portuguese to succumb to his will and become a part of Castile, and the two sides squared off at the Battle of Aljubarrota in 1385, and despite Spain's immense advantage in numbers, they were whipped. It is true that the Portuguese could also count on the support of the English, classic and traditional allies. So the result was that Spain's ambition to gain control of Portugal was set back seriously. Portugal's independence was all but secured, at least for this time, and this is one of the most important dates in Portuguese history. Juan died in 1390 when he fell off a horse outside of the town of Alcalá de Henares, and he was followed by Enrique III, who was just a child at the time, only 11. One curiosity about Enrique is that he was the first infante to be bestowed the title of Prince of Asturias, or the heir to the throne, which is still used today. This is pretty much the same title as the Prince of Wales, who is the next in line to become the next monarch of the United Kingdom. Enrique was one of the more capable rulers of his day and seems to have been successful in many of his projects, but he also suffered a lot from numerous health issues, which is why they sometimes call him Enrique el Doliente, or Enrique the Sufferer, and he died in 1406 at the age of 26. No one really knows what he died of, but it was likely some kind of chronic and degenerative disease. He did have an heir, though, his son Juan. The thing is, he was only 9 months old, so his early days were marked by a regency under his mother, Catherine of Lancaster, and his uncle, Fernando, whom we'll talk about a little later. Juan's reign was one of the longest in the history of Castile, but not one of the most effective. Much of it was devoted to pushing back his enemies. He was even kidnapped in 1420 by the Infante Don Enrique of Aragon, who was trying to basically take control of his kingdom, but he was rescued by his faithful assistant, the controversial Álvaro de Luna. Juan is not considered to have been a very powerful monarch and was criticized for being heavily influenced by Álvaro de Luna. Luna was removed from power on a couple of occasions, but he always seemed to find a way to come back. Juan couldn't seem to live without him. In 1445, the Infantes of Aragon were killed at the Battle of Olmedo, so that part of his conflict disappeared. But then we still had the problem with Álvaro de Luna. Finally, Juan's second wife, Isabella Portugal, couldn't stand Luna and insisted that he go, so he was finally tried for treason and executed in 1453. Juan himself would die the next year in 1454. So it was his son, Enrique IV, who took over and in many ways was as unpersuasive and unimpressive as his father. He too was challenged constantly by nobility. One of the biggest issues working against him was the fact that he hadn't fathered a child. His detractors accused him of being impotent, and some even said he was homosexual. Of course, we must bear in mind that this was a fairly common way to badmouth each other back then, so to this day, scholars still debate the truth. What is true is that in 1462, he officially had a daughter. At least the queen did, and immediately rumors spread that the father was not Enrique IV, but actually a court advisor named Beltrán de la Cueva. The newborn was named Juana, but even today, no one remembers her name. They refer to her as the Beltraneja, which is a derogatory way of saying that she was the bastard child of Beltrán. And another sign of Enrique's weakness was his inability to take a strong stand on who would be his successor. Juana should have been his natural choice, but since the legitimacy of her claim was being held in question, other candidates arose. First, there was Alfonso, Juan's brother, but he died, so Enrique named Isabel, his half-sister, to be next in line. But when she up and married Fernando of Aragon, her cousin, against Enrique's wishes, he got very angry and decided to make Juana la Beltraneja his successor. So basically, he did everything in his power to encourage a bloody conflict to erupt after his death, and that's pretty much what happened. This was on December 11th, 1474, and just 2 days later, on December 13th, Isabel emerged from the Church of San Miguel in Segovia, crowned Queen of Castile, claiming La Beltraneja had no claim to the throne. A civil war broke out, but Isabel and her husband Ferdinand of Aragon were victorious in the end and would begin to make history. Now, speaking of Aragon, what is happening there, because this is the other major kingdom in Spain at the time, As we said, Aragon had its sights set more on the Mediterranean, but its relationship with Castile will be hot and cold throughout the period. Who were the rulers of Aragon over these years? You had Pedro IV from 1336 to 1387, Juan I from 1387 to 1395, Martin I from 1395 to 1410, Ferdinand I from 1412 to 1416, Alfonso V from 1416 to 1458, Juan II from 1458 to 1479, and finally, Fernando II from 1479 to 1516. So Pedro IV was king for most of the 14th century. His eldest son, Juan, became Juan I and reigned for a few years. When Juan died without an heir, his younger brother, Martin, known as Martin the Humane, took over until 1410. Martin also died without an heir, and with him ended the line of the House of Barcelona. Leaders from the three major kingdoms and territories, Aragon, Catalonia, and Valencia, met in the town of Caspe, where they decided who the next king would be, and they said it would be Fernando, who was actually from Castile and a member of the Trastamara family. The Caspe Compromise was a refreshing but rare show of a restrained transition of power. Fernando was actually the uncle and co-regent of Juan II of Castile, if you recall, we just mentioned that. But when he got the job offer to be king of Aragon, he accepted it gladly and became Fernando I. He ruled for just 4 years, but he did his best to make a good impression, working to reduce taxes, protecting the Jewish community. He buoyed the economy, sought greater safety in the region, just to name a few. So, not bad for a man who was there for just a handful of years. Fernando's death led to a new era under Alfonso V, his son, who would go on to be known as Alfonso the Magnanimous. He was a patron of the arts and sciences and supported them throughout his reign. He also helped to found universities. Probably the most notable one was the University of Barcelona. Despite his interesting track record, Alfonso spent surprisingly little time in his kingdom. In 1432, he departed for Naples and never returned. So, for the majority of his reign, the King of Aragon never set foot in his own kingdom, and he would pass away in Naples in 1458. His brother, Juan II, took over because Alfonso did not have an heir. Juan II should not be confused with Juan II of Castile, who was also alive basically at the same time. Juan's reign was hardly a calm one, and that shouldn't be surprising because for much of his life he was fighting others. He fought his own son Carlos for the Kingdom of Navarra. Carlos was better known as the Prince of Viana and was very popular, so Juan was very jealous of his son, and a civil war in Navarre actually broke out. Carlos died in 1461. Soon after that, the Catalan Civil War erupted, in part in response to Carlos's death and in opposition to Juan II as King of Aragon. This civil war is complex, the way most are, but basically you had two sides, generally speaking, the royalists who supported Juan II as the legitimate ruler of the land, and the anti-royalists who supported just about anyone else who wasn't Juan II. What they really wanted was someone who would respect their home rule institutions, their laws, their customs, etc. If this should sound familiar to you, it might be because these are the very same demands that Catalonia and Catalan separatists have been making in recent years. So, as we can see, some Catalans have been fierce defendants of these rights for centuries. In the end, Juan II won that conflict, but there was little time for peace. He then moved on and fought with the French. So these were rough days for Aragon, but things would change quickly after his death in 1479 and the ascension of Fernando II, known as Fernando the Catholic, to the throne. From their union, Isabel and Fernando would go on to be known as the Catholic monarchs. and would become one of the most successful and influential power couples in history, and they would unquestionably change Spain's future forever. But because there is so much to tell about them and about Spain at this time, we are definitely going to have to stop here and pause. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. If you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, please go to our website and click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you wish to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.